You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
These guys survived the David Kahn era of Timberwolves basketball and lived to tell about it. It's Flagrant Howls.
That's right. Timberwolves still in first place in the Western Conference here, despite a loss at Dallas last night. Got the OG Timberwolves guy here and our Gophers apparel. Gopher basketball support, baby.
Ben Johnson, I've said the whole time.
Let's go.
He's doing a great job. Don't fire him, Marky.
Boy, he like legitimately was, I think he was like guaranteed to get fired, right?
Oh,
if this season looked like the last couple, and now he's...
But now.
Now the expectations are... are high. Might have to launch a Gopher basketball show here on Score North somewhere. The Timberwolves lose to the Mavericks last night. And so the update here, the much talked about 16-game stretch against playoff teams. The Wolves are 14 games into it here. We're almost, you can see the finish line. Now, this might be the toughest leg here because you get a day off today and then you go at a feisty Orlando team that is on the rise and it's kind of under the radar, but Orlando has been much improved. And then a back-to-back at Boston, the best team in the NBA. So we'll see if they can even just split those. But they are 8-6, gentlemen. They're 8-6 in these 14 games out of 16. We kind of said if they could finish 500, 8-8 or better would be, we would all sort of take that if you go back like 3 weeks.
All I know is from what I've seen on X and from Wolves fans now, this is a terrible team. They're falling apart. These defeats. I mean, thank God that long two-game losing streak came to an end. I love when teams get good and people don't know how to like be like, oh, okay, yeah, you know, they've lost a couple games to good teams. I thought that Dallas game was great fun last night. And yes, they blew it. And yes, they lost. And yeah, it's a bad loss. Okay. But like what I saw on Twitter post game was just that fourth quarter inexcusable. Fire Finch.
That game was, it is tough because in some ways we're trying to figure out how do we watch a really good Wolves team? Do we break every game down like a football game?
Right.
Do we, you know, do we call for the coach to be fired after they lose a couple games? So, like, on a micro level, yeah, they've lost three out of the last four games. You know, they're kind of playing, like, 500 basketball over this really tough stretch. But that game against Dallas was, man, there's a couple things in there. Number one, you do have to sort of just, like, tip your cap a little bit to maybe the best offensive backcourt in the NBA in Kyrie Irving and Luka Doncic, right?
Sure.
On the other hand, the Wolves, and I've got four Phil's Wolves takes for you guys here, and we'll hit on some of these things. The Wolves need other scoring options, and they just They don't have great ways to microwave offense. But I'll hit you with this. I'll hit you with Phil's Wolves take number one. Anthony Edwards is emerging as one of the NBA's unstoppable forces. So in any given year or any given era, there's like, you know, a group of five or six or seven players that offensively especially are just good luck on any given night. Luka is in that category. I think Giannis in his own way has been there. Joel Embiid, right? Get this, in his last 12 games, and I bring this up, I know it's kind of a small sample size. It's 12 games, and he's been in the league now. This is his fourth year. But he's been ascending for those 4 years. And he even said a couple weeks ago himself, hey, I'm kind of realizing I can just score whenever I want to now. And so I'm just going to shoot even more. And last night he even said, guy, I only took one shot in the last 3 minutes.
Right.
I need to be shooting more in the last 3 minutes. I need to just, I'm the guy in the last 3 minutes. And so he self-reflected after last night's game. So he's making a concerted effort to get to that next level offensively. And he's doing it efficiently. Last 12 games, he's averaging 32 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists, 2 steals, and a block on 50% from the field, 42% from 3, 84% from the free throw line, and he's averaging 9 free throws per game over those 12 games. So if you took those numbers, I get it's a 12-game sample size. It's probably his best offensive 12-game sample of his career. But if you took those numbers and compared them to the entire NBA this season, he'd rank third in scoring behind only Luka and Joel Embiid. And he'd rank third in free throw attempts per game behind only Joel Embiid and Giannis. So I guess it's up to you. Do you think it's just a really good 12-game stretch and he's hot? And he's also playing some of the best teams in the NBA over these 12 games. Or is he getting to a level that is sustainable now? Kind of that end game stage where he is just going to be now, from now until the end of his prime, one of the top unstoppable 4 scorers in the NBA. I think he's graduating to a new level in front of our eyes.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, I think it's definitely door two. Now to what you said before, though, he does probably or certainly need more help. Like I don't think he should. I don't think he should think that I have to take all the shots. And in his, I think, partially frustration, that's what he's saying to a certain point. So it would be nice to get him help, but I also think we are witnessing a star player. And, you know, my God, the offense was great last night, but how about that ridiculous block?
Oh, my God. Yeah, it was a volleyball play, dude. It was like bump set.
What a fantastic play. What a fun play.
Yeah.
But so do you think the fact that I think the stat was, or the factoid was, that he did take one shot over the last 3 minutes of that game. Do you think that's on him? Do you think that's on what was drawn up? Like where does the, cause that did seem odd. I will say that
they're doubling him. So they're trapping him. They're doubling him.
Yeah.
And he's kind of said, I mean, it's a little bit like our Kirk Cousins conversations over the years where, oh, they're playing, you know, two deep safeties, or they're bracket covering Justin Jefferson. So I had to go throw a ball to somebody else. And at some point, Kirk Cousins with Kevin O'Connell in his ear was like, you know what? You just throw it up to your best player. And Anthony Edwards kind of talked through this after the game last night. He's like, yeah, I mean, they're running doubles at me because they know it's a close game late and I'm the number one option. And so he's trying to make plays for other people. He's doing the right thing, which is get the ball moving and get the ball to somebody else. But maybe the right thing more often. And I don't know what the answer is, because I think he has to be a playmaker for this team to be better. I don't want him to just be, you know, selfishly taking 25 or 30 shots at the expense of the team being great. But he's also, like, if you think about it, Kyle and I talked about this last week, I think on the Thursday episode. It's a little, they're, especially with guards, when you start to realize as a young player in your early 20s, you came in, you were a kid when you came in the league. It's a bunch of adults, a bunch of grown ass men making millions of dollars and pushing you around a little bit. But you realize after your second year, your third year, your fourth year, whatever it is, okay, yeah, I can hang at minimum and I can actually just be the best player on the court at any time I'm there. And you kind of start feeling yourself a little bit like, oh, this is great. Yeah, I came in, I was 19 years old, now I'm 22, right. And I'm a grown-ass man. I can score 30 points on any of these guys. You start to flex that muscle, it feels good. Go look at, like, Michael Jordan Now, Michael Jordan was a little earlier coming in. He was a little bit older coming into the league because he played 3 years at North Carolina. But it was like year two or year three after the foot injury, and he's averaging like 37 a game, 35 a game because he can, and it's fun, right? Mm-hmm. And the team wasn't performing as well. Some of it was because they didn't have Scottie Pippen yet. But Phil Jackson comes in, and he's like, okay, you've had your fun. We know you can win scoring titles. Can you use some of your superpowers to make your teammates better and just get the overall operation better? Kobe was kind of the same way, but later, because when Kobe came in, he was with Shaq right away. And so Kobe was kind of secondary. I mean, Shaq was the guy on that team. But then Shaq, they have the falling out. Shaq gets traded to the Heat. And like a year later, so now Kobe's in like his mid to late 20s. And he's looking around saying, finally, I can flex this muscle. I should have five scoring titles. I'm going to go win a couple scoring titles. It's like the scoring title muscle. And I kind of feel like that's where Ant is now. He's looking around saying, I mean, I could. Joel Embiid's getting all this praise, right? Giannis over here, like, I can score 35 or 40 points whenever I want to, too. So can you flex that muscle without it taking away from the overall team aspect? But then, like, to take number two here, Phil's Wolves takes number two. It's so glaring, the need for a third scorer on this team. I don't blame Anthony Edwards for saying, all right, well, if Kat's not scoring, it's either me or Kat. Because if you look right now, in terms of, like, who's going to shoulder offensive load on this team, Anthony Edwards averages 27 points a game. Karl Anthony Towns averages 22 points a game. The next closest player to those guys is Naz Reid off the bench, averaging 12 points per game. Boston Celtics, on the other hand, who you're going to see here in a couple nights, they've got Jason Tatum averaging 27.5. They've got Jaylen Brown averaging 23. Okay, for some reason, if those guys aren't enough for you, Kristaps Porzingis, who's been a 20-point guy for, you know, a number of years in his career, he is averaging 20 points. I mean, Kristaps Porzingis was like 25 points a game at one point. Okay, those guys aren't enough. Derek White, come on down, 17 points a game, you know, sniper three-point shooter. So I don't blame Anthony Edwards for looking around and saying, well, I guess if Kat doesn't have it going, or even if he does, like, the only two real microwave offense options on this team are Karl Anthony Towns and Anthony Edwards. It's the number one thing they probably need at the trade deadline is just someone else to come in here and be able to get you 15 or 20 points on a more regular basis.
What's potentially out there for that fix?
So there's some interesting, I mean, it's hard because they don't have a lot of salaries. Like, they're not moving Karl Anthony Towns midseason. I don't think, especially if you're looking to solve your offensive problem. Are you going to trade your only other really good offensive player to, I'd have to see the net return on that. How would you get better offensively by trading Karl Anthony Towns? A listener sent a list actually a couple days ago of all the players making between like $8 and $15 million, which is kind of the range that they'd be able to swap contracts on. And there's really, there's like maybe 10 or 12 names on a list, and half of them are playing for teams that would never trade them right now because they're also contending. So, I mean, there's like a Doug McDermott in San Antonio. He's one of the best three-point shooters in the NBA, playing on one of the worst teams in the league. He doesn't fit their timeline. You could afford his contract. He is atrocious defensively. I mean, he's literally a guy that you'd put out there for 15, 18, maybe 20 minutes just to shoot threes when he comes off the bench, but you'd have to insulate. And that's another philosophical question. It's like, okay, let's say you move off Kyle Anderson for a Doug McDermott. You take a guy that's kind of a glue chemistry defensive guy that doesn't score for a guy that doesn't play any defense but shoots threes. Is that a net positive for your team, or should you just keep leaning into defense? So they're going to have, and they don't have a bunch of tradable contracts. You're not trading Rudy. You're not trading Kat. You're not trading Anthony Edwards or Jaden McDaniels. You're not trading Naz Reid. So it's like, what can you get for Kyle Anderson, who makes $10 million, Shake Milton, who makes $5 million and has another year left, but he's terrible right now? You know, it's because you've got to match the contracts within 25% in the NBA. So, but it is the glaring need. It's who is the third scorer on this team? And if the answer is Naz Reid or nobody, who can you get in the next month or so to help with that load?
And I think, too, you have to figure out if, like, you don't want to be taking away, like, a lot of shots, obviously, still from Ant and Towns, but you just need a reliable third option here. Like, Malik Beasley was a chucker by the end of it, right? Like, he was just chucking up shots all the time. You don't want to, like, plug in someone who's just going to throw up 16 bricks, and yeah, he might hit 8 or 9 of them on a hot night, but he's mostly only going to make 3 or 4 of them and just shipwreck possessions. So I think finding the guy that can still provide a little bit of spark, but without also taking away like the key shots from Ant and Cat too.
This is Tom Bernard. Can't get enough of sports talk with Phil Mackey and Judd Zolgad? Tune in to the new Tom Bernard Show podcast Monday through Friday as Phil and Judd join me to discuss the latest sports headlines and whatever else comes to mind.
Just download the Tom Bernard Show app wherever you get your podcasts or visit TomBernardShow.com. It's another way to get more from me and Judd talking sports and having fun with Tom, and it's all at your fingertips. Download the Tom Bernard Show app now and join the conversation.
Yeah, it would be... I mean, you would just be eating into, I mean, if you like put on the roster right now, for instance, okay, so you got Cat and Ant, those guys can score. Those guys are going to give you an average of like 50 points a night or whatever it is. Mike Conley, great 3-point. He's having the best 3-point shooting season of his career. He's shooting like 45% from three. He's just getting a ton of wide open looks. He's making them. He'll give you some floaters. I don't remember the last time he scored 20 points. I don't think he has any 20 point games. He's not going to be a guy that's going to carry your offense for a night. You know, like if Cat or Ant are out, right. Mike Conley's not leveling right up to score like 30 points that night. He's just not. Right. Shake Milton did, not oftentimes, but like there was times in Philadelphia where Shake Milton would do this. This is kind of why he was brought here, not to score 30, but like, hey, can you bring some punch? Can you get 10 to 15 on a regular basis? And it has not worked. He's basically out of the rotation. Jaden McDaniels, we'll talk more about him in another take here, but his offense has taken a step back in a year where you're hoping it would go the other way.
Yep.
Naz Reid, he'll get you points. He's the third leading scorer on this team. Kyle Anderson has basically stopped scoring altogether.
Yep.
He took like one shot in 20 minutes last night. Nickeil Alexander-Walker is a good spark plug player, but he's not really ready to be like your third scorer now. And then Troy Brown Jr., there's going to be months where you don't really play him. There's going to be another month where he like helps win a few games with his streaky shooting. Jordan McLaughlin is in your rotation. He can help create offense by being an organizer,
yeah,
but he's not the guy that's going to score 18 points for you.
He's been a pleasant surprise of late for sure. But yeah, I don't think you can, you can't say, well, now that he's been a pleasant surprise, go score a lot. Like that's not, I think you're right. And the thing about it is too, the one thing about this 16-game span that I think is really good is it gives you an idea, and last night's a perfect example, of what the playoffs are going to be like, right? Like last night's game was really intense. It was like a playoff game, mm-hmm. and you're going against teams that when they're playing their entire lineup will really test you. So I actually think this 16-game span provides a great window into what you probably need to address.
It's great. Yep.
Instead of, because, you know, if you get to the first round of the playoffs and you get a matchup like that and you've addressed nothing, you might get bounced and people will be disappointed and it won't be fun. But the reality is this is at least giving you a look to, okay, these are the areas where teams are going to attack us. And if we're not playing a bad team, this is where we can lose games.
Yep. No, these are good. This is a great test. And if they come out of this thing, even if they lose, I think they're going to split. I think they beat Orlando and they lose to Boston. And so I think they're going to wind up, I guess it'd be 9-7 in those 16 games.
Yeah. That's...
And you're drubbing the bad teams and you're drubbing some of the good teams too. Like at the end of the day, again, remember what you thought going into the 16 games. Did anyone say 12-4? They're going to go 12-4 against some of the best teams in the league. No. Hold your own and punch with them. And that's kind of what they're doing. I got two more Wolves takes for you here, but Judd, tell the audience, now that it's January, people are trying to change their habits, change their lives. You lost 40 pounds a couple of years ago with Livia. How can the audience lose some weight?
Well,
get ready for their playoff run.
Exactly right. They can go from being the sports dad on the left to the sports dad on the right by joining Livia Weight Control Centers right now. And it's the new year, so this is a perfect time to get started. By spring, you know what? You're going to be slim and trim, and all those clothes that might not fit now are going to fit. And here's the best part. Because this program works and because they help you through it, you are going to keep that weight off, and you're going to do it. But by the way, if you join now by getting the first 3 months for free, that's right, 3 months for free, 855-GO-LIVEA, Livia.com. And they are also now offering breakthrough weight loss medication options as well. Again, your starting place, Livia, LIVEA.com. Inside or outside the state, it doesn't matter because the whole thing can be done virtually. So check them out. get on that weight loss train today, Livia.com.
And while we're hitting that reset button here in January for a new year, Zero Res can help you hit that reset button on your dirty home, your dirty carpets, your air ducts, you're breathing in that disgusting air. Get that clean, deep breath feeling inside your house, that new house smell with Zero Res. 4.9 out of 5-star rating on Google with over 17,000 reviews. If you call or go to ZeroResMinnesota.com, you can get 3 rooms Zero Resified starting at just $119. That's the Score North special. So ask for the Score North special. You'll get those 3 rooms Zero Resified for just $119. And this month, you can take $75 off when you get your air ducts cleaned as well. 952-0-RES or ZeroResMinnesota.com. Spell it forward or backwards. It spells the same. Zero Res. Okay. Wolf's take number 3. Kyle Anderson is becoming a problem, unfortunately, because he was such a great glue guy for this team last year. One of the best free agent signings in franchise history. But the eye test, no pun intended, and the numbers tell a different story from last year. So last year, the Wolves were 4 points better per 100 possessions when Kyle was on the court versus off the court. So he was kind of a fixer. You could bring him in, and when Carl was out, he was playing more four. You know, they could play some smaller lineups. And he was just like the perfect chess piece you could move around. And he even shot pretty respectably from three-point range. He wasn't brought here, as Chris Finch has said, to shoot threes. But, like, if he's open, you know, I think he was, like, right around league average last year. So they were 4 points better when he was on the court per 100 possessions from when he was off the court last year. This year, the Wolves are 6 points worse per 100 possessions when Kyle is on the court versus off the court. That's a 10-point net difference from the value he brought last year compared to this year per 100 possessions. His offense has fallen off. It was never like elite or great, but he has now just stopped taking threes, and the threes he does take, he's shooting like 11% or something, or 12% from 3-point range. And so, you know, from a defensive standpoint, he does still bring you some value, but they have to make a decision. Can they move his, it's a valuable contract. It's an expiring contract. It's $10 million. Some team that wants to free up $10 million in space would take that contract on and then let it expire after the year. Could you take him and swap him for an offensive-centric player? And the other complicated question, too, to your, you know, Judd, you were asking who's available. It's got to be a player that also comes off the books almost certainly for next year, because you don't want to take on $10 million when you're already dealing with major luxury tax issues.
Right.
But they either have to figure out a way for the offense to be better when he's on the court, or they have to just move him for something that can help them in the last couple months of the season.
What would be the key to getting him right? And by right, I don't mean great. I just mean, again, productive offensively.
Well, I think if he could, we're not asking for a lot, but like if he can knock down some open, I mean, there's literally games where he's the Knicks game the other, like last week during the Christmas week. I mean, he's wide open in the corner and Jaden McDaniels fires him a pass. Like it was like a broken, it was either broken coverage or they just aren't guarding him in the corner anymore. Kind of both. And he's not even shooting those.
Right.
So I don't know what the fix is. If he's not going to shoot those, he's not going to make those. And the offensive net rating is down like 5 or 6 points per 100 from last year. I mean, the offense wasn't great with him on the court last year, but it was a lot better than it is this year when he's on the court.
So is the starting point that he's just, is he deferring to Ant more? Like what is, because he did shoot enough last year and seemed to have pretty good chemistry with Gobert as well, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. Well, you also have like whether, I mean, deferring to, if he should be deferring to Ant.
But, right, but I
when,
mean,
but when Ant's not on the court or when Ant isn't, you know, maybe he's not open or whatever it is, that kind of gets back to the core problem is you got Kyle Anderson. If you're not deferring to Ant, there's not that many guys to defer to that are going to get you a bucket. So,
but if Ant's being doubled and gets the ball to you and you can't make the shot, you can't make a shot or you don't even trust yourself, that becomes a problem too.
That is the problem. Yeah.
Right. But I mean, it's like the run game in football. It doesn't have to be great, but it has to be a threat, like some type of threat. And it feels like Kyle's presence on the court offensively is now, unfortunately, only a threat to the Timberwolves.
Yeah, which brings me to my fourth and final take for this episode of Flagrant House.
Cover your ears, Declan. I think I know what this is.
Yeah, I know what it is.
Do you?
Maybe.
I don't know if you do.
I think I do. I think you mentioned it. I think you teased it earlier in the show.
Jaden McDaniels has been underwhelming this season.
That's what I thought it was.
Okay.
No question. I sent you a note last night about that.
Yep. Let's talk about it. So defense, check. Like he's going to, I mean, last night, you know, you're never going to shut those guys down completely, but like he's right. Flustering Luka. I mean, he's going to be a defensive pest. He's one of the best on ball perimeter defenders. That's great. That's a given. His scoring is down from last year. He's just kind of like, he's kind of a wallflower on most nights offensively. He was 1 for 10. Was he 1 for 10 last night?
Yeah, that's well put. Wallflower is perfect word.
He's just kind of like you go to a junior high dance or something, and he's just kind of like, you know, he's up against
the
wall
corner with a punch, you know, glass of punch.
Yeah, just kind of like hands in his pockets, creepy pockets. The other thing too is like he's not being asked to rebound as much because he's out there oftentimes with Kat and Gobert, and I get like those guys are going to scoop up a lot of the rebounds, but he was averaging 4 rebounds per game the last couple of years. It's down to 2, so. Okay, I get it. You're focusing a lot on making sure you get back on defense. You're making sure you're locked in on who you're supposed to be on. But like, there's got to be some bandwidth to do other things on the court. And Chris Finch was asked about his offense and like, hey, how come? What's preventing Jaden McDaniels from being like the third scoring option is wide open on this team right now.
Right.
He is a skilled player. If you look actually at his shot chart, so. He's an above league average 3-point shooter. He was 40% last year. He's dipped to like 35. So he's like a league average to slightly above league average 3-point shooter. He can take threes, and we've seen that. He also shoots 76% from the rim, which is really good. When he gets to the rim, he converts and he finishes. He shoots 55% from between 3 and 16 feet. That sort of floater range, that mid-range game. You know, he uses the backboard once in a while. When he takes these shots, he makes the shots. And so Chris Finch was asked about, hey, how do you get Jaden McDaniels more involved? He goes, someone's got to pass him the ball. He goes, he's not a guy that we're going to run plays for. And Chris Finch has more of a free, he's not calling plays every time down. It's more of a free flowing
right.
offense. And Jaden McDaniels, whether it's because he's like not vocal enough or his teammates aren't thinking about him, or it's just like, he's out there a lot because he's starting with Karl-Anthony Towns and Anthony Edwards. I don't know, but there's a lot more offense to tap into there with him. He's taken steps back as an offensive player and a rebounder. And I just, you know, he just signed that contract. That was my biggest worry, is that you're signing this contract. It's awesome that you're a defensive stopper, but you need to do more than just be a defensive stopper. You need to be contributing. And I think at some point it's not unrealistic to say that he should be the third scorer behind on this roster. He should be the third scorer behind Anthony Edwards and Karl-Anthony Towns. I think he's capable of being like a 15, 16 points per game guy. He plays the minutes, certainly. Mm-hmm. So he's just been, I guess my take is he's just been underwhelming for me this year.
Is 10 shot, but I mean, so to Chris Finch's quote or his point, you know, 1 for 10, 10 shots, 5 3-point attempts seems like enough to me.
Yeah. There's last night, and then there's the season. Like last night, yeah. He just had a bad night offensively.
Right.
On the season, he's shooting 51% from the field on only 4.5 attempts per game. I'm sorry, on 8.5 attempts per game. I think he should be taking over like at those percentages, unless he's forcing bad shots. Like, he should be taking way more than 8.5 shots a game.
So
with
he
those
should be
percentages.
The third guy. Yes.
He could be. Maybe Naz Reid's the third, but like Jaden McDaniels should be scoring more than 10 points.
He's a threat as a third guy.
Yep. Yep. Like there should be nights where he's scoring 25 points here and there.
Right.
Not every night, but we need a little bit more out of
Declan. He's your Jaden guy. McDaniels.
Well, I mean, he has been underwhelming. Like, in the game against New Orleans, like, he was okay stat-wise, but still just not making the shots he should. And I think we're kind of in the phase where we do this with a lot of different Minnesota athletes, of the theory of what if he reaches his full potential. And, look, he is still 23 years old. He's very young. But at this point, like, I mean, he's played 4 years in the NBA. Unless there's a team philosophy change to really feed him the ball more, this is who he is. This is a 10 to 12 point a night guy. He's not going to shoot a ton unless he's force fed the ball. And I don't think you should be force feeding the ball. Like, he has been ineffective, and I don't necessarily know if there's something that can like snap things out to get him the ball more, to get more in a rhythm, if that's good, because again, that takes away shots from Ant and Cat. But I think we kind of just know who he is, which is a very elite defender and a guy who should be in the corner making more threes. But at the end of the day, he's also not going to be getting the ball a ton, and I don't think we should be force feeding him either. So I think he's just kind of stuck a little bit in a rut. It's been a sticky season for him in a bad way, but I think he can also still get out of this.
And I disagree that he is who he is, because I think in the NBA, there's a lot of room between age 22 and age 27 to get, there's a lot of examples. I mean, DeMar DeRozan, like, there's a bunch of examples of guys that it took them 5, 6, 7 years before their offensive game really flourished at its peak. But if you look, for instance, too, so if you just look at the Wolves players' effective field goal percentages, so that's essentially, it takes into account that three-point shots are more efficient and worth more, but it's how efficient are you as a scorer? So Rudy Gobert almost always ranks number one on the team in effective field goal percentage because he has a really high shooting percentage. He's not missing a lot of shots, so he's just going to have a higher percentage. Mm-hmm. Mike Conley is second because he's knocking down 45% of his threes. Naz Reid is third because he's knocking down a bunch of threes and shooting 50% from the field. Jaden McDaniels is next on that list. His effect, like, he is an efficient scorer. And so there's just got to be a way. I'm not saying he's going to wind up being, you know, a 25 points per game guy long term, but 10, we got to get that thing up to like 15 or 16 somehow. Yeah. Some of it's probably on him. Some of it's on his teammates. Some of it's on Finchie. But,
and I don't think you sign into that contract to just accept the present or status quo, right? Like, you sign him to that contract because there should be more there.
Yes.
And yeah, that's fine if it's on him, if it's on Finch, if it's on the team. But I think your point from the top of the show is spot on, which is if you're going to have a playoff run, you probably can't not have a third score.
Yeah, they can still hang their hat on being, I think they're still the number one defense in the NBA, according to the metrics. So you can get away with a lot more when you are the number sure. one defense, but you're not yeah. winning the championship without exactly. a third scoring option, right? So,
hey, I got a question for you, and it's probably premature right now, but I got a name to throw at you as far as part of this, part of the solution for the future of this franchise.
Okay.
Leonard Miller.
I don't know if he's a this year solution.
Right.
If you look at his box scores, he is lighting it up offensively in Iowa for the G League Wolves. But, I will admit, like, I'm not glued to these Iowa Wolves games, but there are some smart people in the Wolves blogosphere that are. Mm-hmm. And there's just a lot of, like, immaturity stuff, just, like, non-existent defense, stretches in games where he's, like, doesn't know where to be. There's things that just won't. I mean, Chris Finch isn't playing Josh Minot. Chris Finch isn't. Right. They have, like, first-round picks that aren't playing in NBA games, even though they're playing 8.5-man rotation, so. I think Leonard Miller is for sure at minimum a summer away from being like a key role player on this team. Maybe I'm wrong, but to your point, I mean, they're going to be open for business for someone to come in on a cheap contract. Right now they're open for business for someone to come in and score some points, right. But next year in particular, they're going to want to move away from luxury tax land as right. much as they can. And so it'd be great, but yeah, offensively, you could probably put him in a game and he'd score some points in an NBA game right now, but I just don't know that they trust him enough to do that.
Sure.
So we'll see. If there's an injury or two, like if Cat goes down again or something.
It's always about the prospects. It's always about the prospects, gentlemen.
Yeah, he's a fun one. He's absolutely a fun one. One more thing on Jaden McDaniels. So we compared last year, the first 3 years of his career, to another former first-round pick, San Antonio, 2011, 2012, Kawhi Leonard, same ages, like, you know, 2021. Both those guys had nearly identical numbers and measurements and everything the first 3 years. And then Kawhi in year four started to go toward, okay, I'm going to go up to 16.5 points a game. I'm going to lead the league in a couple categories defensively. And then I'm going to be an all-star in my fifth year. Jaden McDaniels has taken a slight step back in his fourth year. So, breaking news. He's not on the Kawhi Leonard track.
He's off that track.
Is the fifth take here. But yeah, like you'd like to see a little bit more progression going into year four. It took Kawhi. Kawhi didn't become a fully realized version of himself until his sixth year in the league, age 25. And then he took another jump even like once he got to the Clippers, like the Raptors and the Clippers. So there is room over the next few years, but does he take it? Does he go to that next step?
Intrigues me about him too, because his style of play and his intensity on defense is really impressive at times. Like he definitely goes into the game with an edge that helps him. But what I'm intrigued about with him is how does he learn to dial that down at the right times? Cause like, you don't want to take a guy like that and be like, you got to calm down all the time. And you got to, because that's part of the chip on his shoulder, and the anger is part of what actually makes him effective defensively. But like that tech last week, late in that game, which is just completely,
the LeBron, you know,
unnecessary. Doesn't do you any good. Things like that. There are times punching a wall, for instance, you know? So it's like, how do you tone that down to a simmering rage instead of an out and outrage? Because you don't want to tell them, hey, dude, you got to tone everything, you know?
Or that's how about you channel that rage into your offensive game? I mean, that's what Anthony Edwards does sometimes. It's like, I'm getting screwed by the officials that we're losing in this game. I'm going to go and just like score 10 points in the next four possessions, you know?
After watching Luka last night, I apologize to everyone I previously thought was tough on officials.
Oh, yeah.
Watching him.
Oh, he's the George Washington on the Mount Rushmore.
It's just incredible.
Isn't it funny that he's just like, he's kind of schleppy too?
He's going to be a fat guy.
Yeah, he looks like it's a guy you have beers with at the bar.
Yeah.
In a good way, by the way. I don't mean that in a negative way.
He bitches about work
and
just complains about work constantly.
Like, how does a guy that he's clearly like 15 pounds heavier than he probably could be if he took working out as seriously as like a Kobe or somebody?
Oh, God, yeah.
You know, but he still dominates.
He looks like he belongs in the NBA circa 1975.
Yeah, just schlepping around, shooting bank shots.
And he's got those patches he wears on for like recovery purposes.
It's the cupping. He has the cupping.
Yeah, the cupping things. He comes out with the cupping things on, and then he just absolutely kills. But the amount that he complains, you know, last night, and it's hilarious because the boom mics are picking up. Is, you know, come on, what are you talking about there?
Yeah, it is funny. I mean, I don't like the way that Carl and even Anthony Edwards does it. I don't like how they get fixated on it so much. Yeah. But obviously, there are other examples, and Luka is the number one. And Carl in particular, I think, has a case to be made. There's been some great videos too of like, here's a play that Carl made and then a play that somebody else made. It's the same play and the officials call it the other way. Like Carl, but Carl and, you know, Luka has a way, I think, of like almost intimidating officials into calling for his favor eventually.
Yes.
Carl kind of does it in a passive way where he's like complaining without making eye contact. I almost feel like if Carl were to like, actually look through an official soul and walk up to him in the way that Luka does and like intimidate them with confidence. But he kind of does it in this passive, annoying way.
Well, and Carl,
people are going to hammer me for this, I'm sure. But
Carl also sort of whines and Luka sort of attacks. Like it's an immediate, like, what are you talking about?
And yeah, it's more of like an alpha attack.
But you know what? Beta, as far as the calls go, Jim Pete has this down. He's 1,000% right. Part of Carl's problem is he draws fouls that don't get called because he flops. Jim Pete's whole thing is stay up. You've got to stay up.
Yeah, move, but don't go down.
Right.
Like, make it clear that there was contact, but don't hit the deck.
Yep.
Yeah, it's almost too much of an exaggeration.
Yep.
Yeah. So, all right, there's a handful of Wolves takes for you guys on this Monday. We'll hit you with another episode tomorrow with Kyle coming in, and we'll see if the Wolves can finish out this dreaded 16-game stretch against exclusively playoff teams where they're 8-6 right now. This is your favorite Timberwolves lifestyle podcast, Flagrant Howls.